Scatter-a-dee, da-dap-a-da-doo. What's Dave doing? Ah, nothing. Da-dap-a-da-dee.
You guys seen Dave recently?
Dave?
Dave who?
Dave. Skeeper. Dave. Skeeper.
Skeeper. Oh, say it again!
Dave.
Woohoo!
Dave. Skeeper.
It's Dome and Bedlam, the official Lookout Landing podcast. My name is Nathan Bishop. I am the managing editor of Lookout Landing. We've got a really fun and hopefully enjoyable broadcast for you today. I have the same two guys that are always with me. I'm going to start with David Skiba, broadcasting somewhere from the depths of his own personal hell. David, how are you today?
I'm great. I'm literally in hell in the sense that I'm broadcasting from my small business.
Which circle of Dantean hell would you say that you...
Which one's five? Does anyone remember five?
I'm just trying. I'm getting them confused with the mark.
Five. I think that's the first level in God of War 3. I think it's level...
I'm trying to remember. I'm getting them confused with the worlds of Super Mario games. You know how they're all the same theme every single time, and I forget what world five is. Is that the one?
I'll tell you right now. The fifth circle... Oh, this is perfect. The fifth circle's anger. Exactly. That is exactly where I am.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, time is a flat circle. So,
a flat circle of hell. And speaking of, I also have Scott Weber, former editor of Lookout Landing, now editor emeritus. And Scott, what's good this evening?
Everything's good.
Except
for the Tigers.
Oh, God. Did you both watch this?
I did.
No.
But you're.
I watched it fall apart via the internet.
Hmm.
I think that counts.
That's what the internet's for. Watch it fall apart.
I was there.
That's
I saw
the
it on
only
the
thing it's there for.
So
nothing
else. If you didn't for some reason figure this out between Wednesday, September 28th when we're recording this, and September 30th when I think this will go live, the Blue Jays were ahead of the Orioles 2-1 in the ninth inning in a game that they really needed to win for the Mariners. It would have brought the Mariners within one game of the second wild card. And the Blue Jays instead totally fucked it up and gave up a two-run home run to a guy who has five home runs all year and lost 3-2. And
from a guy who's been lights out all year.
Yeah, yeah.
Their closer's been, I mean, Osuna's been great this year.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. And just contributing to my personal hatred of the Blue Jays this year. They've been my least favorite team in the vast majority of the 2016.
Okay, I thought we already titled a podcast Hate Week. So we got to...
No, this is just hate. This is hate segment.
It's hate way of life.
Hate life.
Eternal hate.
Hate life. That's what we're doing right now. Mm. Yeah, so the...
put that on a t-shirt.
I'm going to sell it.
I'm pretty sure that's actually... No,
King
you know
of
what?
Retail,
you know what?
David
I'm not going to digress into politics right now. Instead...
Are you sure?
Instead, we're going to...
Are you sure?
Instead...
When are you going to release your tax returns?
We're going to... Instead... We're going to move forward with alcohol, which I'm going to start tonight because I never started this one. I am drinking something I have never drank on this podcast before. I'm drinking a Merlot, a red wine.
Ooh,
a Merlot.
A Merlot, which if I understand from my experience with the film Sideways, is the best varietal of wine.
Dude, that movie is the worst.
Yes, let the hate flow.
Like that movie sucks so bad.
I don't know anything about it other than I watched it once when I was like 23.
And a crazy thing about that movie, though, is it literally took within 2 years, the plantings of Merlot in Napa Valley decreased by like 35% because no one drank it anymore.
So what are the David,
Sandra O, what have you done?
David, tell me, what are the typical characteristics of the Merlot grape?
So this is the fascinating thing about the grape Merlot is it's
boring.
I would say next to Pinot Noir, it's one of the most terroir specific grapes.
Okay.
In the sense that it's very, very location dependent. I actually do think Merlot grown in California is pretty boring because it's not a grape that takes heat well. However, in Washington, I think it does super well a lot of black pepper, almost like the midpoint of like a Cab Franc and a Syrah, I guess. It's like a more red Syrah. It's pretty cool. I love Washington Merlot. You should drink a lot of it.
I am currently working on that as we speak. And this, I don't have the bottle in front of me. This actually is a Washington Merlot, and I'm enjoying
it. It's so good. It gets Merlot gets a lot of bad rap, but I think Washington Merlot is fantastic.
I live for Merlot.
Ooh, live for this.
You do? Okay, you both like wine
way
more than I do.
Specific subset that'll understand that reference. Clearly not you two.
No.
It's a Seinfeld reference.
Oh. No. I still can't place it, and I've seen every episode of Seinfeld. That makes me sad.
There you go. Scott, I haven't seen him 7 times like me.
Scott, are you drinking?
I am. So I am on current... Well, I'll start at the beginning of the story. One place I'll recommend to everybody, free shout out, it's my very favorite place to go and drink beer, is Elliott Bay Pizza and Pub. It's actually in Mill Creek, so it's a little bit of a haul north, but it's worth the trip. I make the trip pretty regularly. Their tap list is unbelievable. They have a permanent tower of Triple Carmelite, which is probably my favorite beer in the entire world. So I had one of those. And then after that, I had the Fremont Brewing Field to Ferment Fresh Hop Pale Ale, which is unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's actually...
That's a centennial fresh hop this year, right?
It is, yeah. And it is... it's maybe my favorite beer Fremont's ever done. That's why... Mm. That's how much I love that beer. And now I am back at home, and I am enjoying a Bale Breaker Field 41.
Mm. You are high class tonight for you.
Also very, very delicious. So.
A fun fact is that both those beers come from the same farm.
Oh. Is it Farmville?
My strawberries are just getting ripe.
Scott, I'm fascinated by you liking... You're such a... you're such a unique person in that sense of really enjoying.
You're so unique.
For a Northwest craft beer fan.
Excuse me, I'll exit while you guys go on your first Tinder date.
Hey, David, just because Scott and I know what love is.
Hold on, I don't know what direction I swiped in.
Diagonally upward right.
Yeah, it was like you type on the swipe thing where you're just spelling things out all over the place. It was like I made a star of sorts. All right,
iOS.
Yes, go on with your analysis of my taste.
I'm very intrigued by your love of Belgian beer because that is the flavor profile there is so on the far end, opposite end of the spectrum of what the Northwest is known for and what most people around here like to drink.
Yeah.
Yeah, so no, I know it's there. It's a opposite ends of the spectrum.
It's that Belgian candy sugar, that richness.
Yeah, I love. I mean, I'll go all over the place too. Like triples that are very, you know, clove and banana-y, and even like a little light caramel. Like I love that. But I also love like Westmalle and more of like a double style Belgian.
Mm-hmm.
Saisons, love them. Farmhouse is like my jam. Love Farmhouse.
Do you get down with Delirium Tremens? Is that in your wheelhouse?
I love Delirium.
Me too. Awesome. I think that's my favorite Belgian.
Mm.
Yeah. It's I'm all about it. It just I go all the way because that spectrum kind of goes down the scale until you get to Farmhouse, and then Farmhouse is like, you can have some pretty tart Farmhouses, and then you get to Sour and I'm like, nah, I'm out.
Yeah. I can't and I just gleefully jump into that because I love sour beer so much.
But I don't. Yeah, it's. I had a sour from a local brewery one time.
Ooh,
it was a Gosa,
mm.
And it did change my mind on it. So shout out local brewery for that one. But generally, I stay away from the super tart sours, and also like any lambic or framboise or anything like that's not really my thing.
So we've touched on generally, we'll get to baseball soon, but the themes will stay soon. So the themes will stay consistent because so far we've talked about
Belgium.
We've talked about beer and we've talked about sadness. And so in that theme, David, you are at a local brewery right now.
I am.
What are you attempting to dull your pain and sadness or maybe begin to understand a little better through consuming?
I'm actually doing one of my favorite Seattle IPAs, which is from a brewery that's a bit of a throwback because I love Pike. I love their Space Needle Golden IPA.
Oh,
that's a great beer.
I like that beer. So I got a couple. Actually, I also have a Rubens Rye the nice thing, the one good thing about opening up your own brewery is you get a very large refrigerator as part of it.
One nice.
That's just, yeah. That's just it's full
as,
of
it's
beer.
It's as big of a, it's as yeah. big as a shipping container, actually.
Yeah, it's even, if it's even a shipping container. And it's full of beer for me to drink. So I got a lot of ammo if needed, which it will be needed, because after I drink these beers, I'm actually going to install some doors and hoist a beam. And I have to do some more Venetian plaster and probably trim out all my walls.
So, yeah, and that takes me to my next point, which is a longstanding theme of this podcast and my tenureship as a managing editor of Lookout Landing has been to regularly advise people against having children. And I feel like given
what's
this experience
three, what's
for
a
you...
Three-word? Three-word mantra?
Don't have kids. It's been the mantra that I've been advising people. But given David's recent experience, I think that I have to alter that to don't start a business. Because when you have kids, yes, it sucks all of your time away, and they slowly bleed away your life essence over a period of time. But they also teach you a lot about yourself. You learn about love, a sacrifice, and the caring and dependency, and this ability to raise something, as opposed to starting your own business, which is just hell. Only yes, pain and misery without any inevitable reward.
There is no reward. There is no floor. There is no spoon. There is no beer.
There is, God knows, there's not a ceiling.
There's not a
no
single
upside.
Boat.
And there's not a fucking boat in sight. Not a one.
There's
actually, if you go outside my walls, you will see a lot of boats.
So if you absolutely must, go ahead and procreate. And then...
Yeah, have some kids, but don't open a business.
That is the strongest advice that Lookout Landing under my leadership has ever actually given. I can co-sign that. Let's move on towards baseball. We shit around and we joke a lot on this podcast, but here we are. There's four games left in the season, and I know that for varying circumstances, you guys don't pay attention to the team at the same depth that I do, at least not in the second half for you, David, since your business has really gotten intense. Yeah. But I've found myself being this past week, especially being not necessarily nostalgic, but definitely at that time in the year when I'm looking at numbers, I'm watching these guys play. And while we'll get to, you know, their playoff hopes and how tenuous those are and that they still exist and how great it is to watch meaningful September baseball. But I'm very much in the basking stage of this season of just appreciating the things that we've seen over this year. And I really believe that while I do think that this franchise is headed in the right direction, and I do think that there are really good things that the leadership has and the new ownership has that can push this franchise to the heights that it's always fallen short of, right now at 158 games in, the 2016 Mariners are the most enjoyable Mariner team since at least 2003, and I don't think you can really argue otherwise. Do either of you have do either of you share a different viewpoint on that?
No, I this team is very fun. I mean, there's been Mariner teams that have teased with competitiveness in years past. I think probably 2014 is obviously the closest that it was because it came down to the very last game. 2007 was a very fun year until I think we talked about this a couple of episodes ago. They just absolutely collapsed in the middle of summer.
Mm-hmm.
I think the thing that's been most fun about following this team and the reason it feels so different is that, first of all, dingers, right? I think more home runs have been hit in Safeco Field this year than any other ballpark in the majors.
Mm-hmm. One of the craziest stats of the last 10 years.
Really certifiably insane if we think about the narrative of move the fences, everything is...
If only we had Justin Smoke now, right, fellas?
Yeah. My gosh, he would go to... He would just make it to that warning track. Forget that green, you're going to warning track this time.
We can talk a little bit later about the hundreds of people I would rather see play first base for the Mariners right now than the person that currently is.
Yeah, by the way, stay around. At the 35th minute, we're going to have Justin Smoke joining us.
I'm excited for that. I'll have to.
No, but I think the reason this team has been so fun more than anything is simply because offense is more fun than pitching and defense, which has been a foundation of the Mariners forever. And it's fun to watch a game and see them go 3-0 down in the first, and you go, okay, well, the game's not over. And that's a key difference from successful Mariner teams in the past, where the second they went down 3 or 4 runs, it just was, I mean, it was done in your mind. And mathematically, from a like stats perspective and comeback, it was probably over too. So it's been very, very enjoyable. And plus, how can you not love what Nelson Cruz has done and Robbie Cano has done this year? Absolutely. And Kyle Seager.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's just, it's just unreal. Yeah. It's redemption for Cano. It's holy shit, he did it again for Cruz. And it's the breakthrough year for Seager. And it's just been really fun to watch.
Yeah, it's been I don't know if they've ever had. Yeah, it's the only time they've ever had this before, anything close to this, is and it probably was better than this, was Griffey and A-Rod and Edgar. But those are, you know, three of the 50 best hitters of all time that they had in the lineup going together. So that's kind of a really high bar to hold them against. And I totally agree that that troika has been a treat to watch. David, what about for you, man? I don't even want to make the joke at this point. You are much younger than both of us. So your ability, like your experience with recent and past Mariner teams might be a little different, but this feels, even though the record may be somewhat approximate to, you know, 2014, 2009, 2007.
Yeah.
It has felt different, has it not, the experience?
Yeah. I mean, and I remember, you know, I remember the late 90s teams, but this is, it's just such a different season than I think we've really ever had, because, you know, when we think back to those late 90s teams, those early 2000 teams, they were so dominant, and it was almost like when they lost, it was a surprise.
Yeah.
And this team definitely doesn't have that quality to it. They had stretches where it was a surprise when they lost. But watching this team go through its daily life has been weirdly reminiscent of almost like going through like your own life in a weird way. Like, but seriously, it's like, it's so unexpected every game, you know? And of course we've had, you know, 30 clunkers and 30 easy wins, but there's been such a variation of the way each game has gone. Like, there's been games where Paxton is just blown away at the opposing team for 8 innings. And there's been a game where, you know, Robbie drops 2 bombs, like, bombs. So it's been so different, and in that way it's very, very entertaining.
Yeah, I think it's that idea. I think both of you nailed it, in that every single game it feels like there is the full spectrum of possibility out there. Like,
yeah,
they're not good enough where you feel confident, but they're not bad enough where you feel hopeless no matter what. I mean, this is a team that we saw, even when they were losing, go on a 7-game stretch where they went 2 Fenway and 2 Wrigley against 2 of the best teams in baseball, and absolutely took them toe to toe every single day, and not in a fluky way. They went talent for talent, and not as good. They're not as talented as those teams, but they're not that far.
But they
far
could certainly
off.
Win a series.
Yeah, yeah. They are not that
yeah,
far off.
Right.
And that ability to like both of you said, to do anything on any given day, and that includes blowing huge leads. That includes blowing 6-0 leads on Sunday sure night does. Baseball against the Cubs. But that is all. And I think they've played the most 1-run games in baseball now, although I don't have that in front of me. So I could be talking out of my ass there. But it's very close to the most. If
hey.
It's not the most. Hey.
Well, actually, Twitter, get on that.
They will. That well, Twitter and I have had an interesting week that maybe I'll touch on later. yeah, it's been. It's they've blown leads, and they've also, this is also the team that came from 10 runs back in San Diego. They have, I think, 7 walk-off wins. They've done in 158 games almost everything that you can do in a baseball game, it feels like. They haven't had a no-hitter. Nobody's hit for a cycle. Other than that, almost everything that could happen has happened, it seems like. And it's you know, would we like to have 90 wins at this point and be like cruising for
Anya?
Yeah, on David. That's, is that your dog?
Yeah, my dog's here.
Okay. Wait, are you at work right now?
Am I never not?
Just a sad tackle of a broken empty man. Yeah, it's every single, there have been so many Mariner teams where you turn on the TV, not only do you know that they're going to lose, you know exactly how they're going to lose. You can, and that's what Scott, you were talking about, man. Like, if they give up more than three runs, they are screwed. You know? Like,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The second a starter blinks in the second inning, if you give up a three-run home run, well, that's the game.
And those teams are so recent in the memory, too.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, but that's been the predominant experience of the Mariners in this decade. And this team has been utterly different. And you know what that's led to? Is it's led to a lot more, in my opinion, it's led to a lot more anguish. Like, this team
totally has made. You can see where their ceiling is, and obviously they're not going to be at it every night.
This team has driven me nuts. Like, they just fucking, like, last night's a great example.
Last night was brutal.
Yeah, they're up 4-2. They're playing a good game against the Astros drive them crazy. It's, I think, the sixth inning. And the two worst players on the team, Ketel Marte and Adam Lind, make boneheaded errors. Felix is struggling, keep leaving balls up. And before you know it, 4-2 turns into 8-4. And it's so preventable. You watch that happen and it's just like, God, you guys are better than this. And that's how you feel when this team loses games, is you guys are better than this, as opposed to, well, shit, you could see that
totally
a mile away. So it's just,
gosh,
yeah.
That was really interesting last night because I tweeted out that it kind of broke my heart that Felix was terrible last night.
Mm-hmm.
And I was met with a barrage of responses about how it wasn't his fault and there were errors, which I agree.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, he was bad yesterday. He was bad.
Can we also talk about the fact that, I mean, and this doesn't, I mean, it does matter, but Adam Lind clearly got the out.
I'm pretty bitter. Jake Marisic,
and I totally understand it not being overturned.
Yeah.
Because it was close, but it's a shame.
I would understand it if baseball's replay system made any goddamn sense, even a little bit. Like,
he's still a mess.
The stuff that gets, like, at least with football, they have this, like, yes, they don't get it right every single time.
A theoretical protocol.
But they have this very clear definition of whatever the call on the field is, unless there's something that clearly overturns that, we're going to keep the call on the field. With baseball, it's just like, yay,
it's how it feels.
Yeah, you know. Like,
yeah, but what is a catch, though?
Hey, Dez caught the ball.
You know, this is not a let's list the problems with football podcast. Otherwise, we would have an episode every day. So, yeah. No, it's.
Hey, my knees are in great health.
Felix was not great last night. They caught every bad break, and it was a very good summation in a single game of all the things that have driven me crazy about this team. But I'm so excited. Just to spin that forward, it's so nice to be driven crazy by a baseball team. There's so many Mariners teams that by July it's just like, I'm just numb.
Yeah.
You know?
It doesn't matter,
like,
at all.
Like, last year we talked from like July on about, my God, how are they playing another baseball game? Why are they doing this? You know?
They played a game the day Jack Zarenczyk was fired.
Yeah.
That was amazing to me.
I bet they were probably pretty.
And if you look at that lineup, it was like, who are these guys?
They won that game.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, yeah.
Good memories.
So, yeah, it's been an amazing game. Now, the current situation, as we record right now, this will change by the time this episode is up on Friday morning. But as of right now, I did not see if the Tigers and the Indians were officially canceled or if there was a change in the score there. Was it officially called?
Officially called.
An official game?
Yep.
And yeah, it's over. Bullshit.
It's over.
So, yeah, the Tigers win 6-3 against the Indians. So right now it's the Mariners are one game back of the Tigers, two games back of the Orioles with four games to play. The Tigers have one more game against Cleveland and then three games against the Barves of all teams.
Nice of Cleveland to really roll out their A squad, too.
Good
Lord.
Which is just horrible team management, by the way.
Well, especially Cleveland's pushing for the best record, too, in home field.
It's ridiculous. I think I saw Jose Mesa close out the game the other day.
That guy's good, though, right? I mean, you want him to close out your first game in the new stadium.
Mm. Yeah, got to do it.
Why?
I think Travis Fryman played a couple innings.
Just because you're starting your own business and you're a miserable sack of shit doesn't mean you need to bring that to me. Okay?
Hey, starting my own business didn't make me a miserable sack of shit.
I started my own business because I'm a miserable sack of shit. yeah, and so, and then, but the good news for the Orioles, so the Mariners pretty much, I mean, technically, mathematically, they could lose one game against Oakland. Realistically, they have to sweep them. The good news is Oakland is one of the two or three worst teams in the American League. They are miserable.
Yeah,
they,
but
go ahead.
I'm just saying we're not. They have a little flexibility. They're not. This is not full little big league scenario where the Mariners have to drop four in a row and the Twins have to win four in a row to get
out. No, it's not that bleak. And the good news, like what I was just about to say, is that Baltimore has another game against Toronto, who's still fighting for wild card one to be able to.
Yep. And Detroit has another game against Cleveland.
And yes, and then Baltimore, who is currently still in the lead, have to go play the Yankees, who are way more fun and full of piss and vinegar than they have any right to be. I just saw that tonight Mark Teixeira walked off the Red Sox, which was like
his first walk-off ever.
I know, and in
that's
like
insane.
I loved that. Did you see the Boston dugout? Because they clinched tonight, you know?
Yeah.
They
yeah.
clinched the division. Because Toronto lost, but they're sitting there, they're just like,
getting walked off.
Man, that was depressing. We're going to the playoffs. And there's just like this one Jamoke over in the stands, just like holding up a division champion, like while the Yankee fans go crazy around. He's like, we are the champs, blah, blah, blah. And it's just
Poppy
like,
Poppy was the best. Poppy was the best.
Got your shit handed to you by like the Prince of England's BFF. Go piss off.
Wait, are him and William close?
Mark? There was one thing at like 2 years ago where one of the brothers came to America and like Tex was like hosting him while they were in New York, which was awesome because Tex looks like a British prince.
This is Applebee's. It's pretty good.
You took him. Yeah. You took him to all Fieri's restaurants, I'm sure. No, man. Tex looks, he looks like a British aristocrat. Have you seen that guy without like in a suit?
Yeah. It's true. He should be in Downton Abbey.
He is a Downton Abbey character. I'm telling you, man.
He's got to get some sort of bowler cap on him or something. It'll fit real
I
nice.
I guarantee you, he's worn it.
Get that guy in some felt.
Have you guys experienced this? So like for years, Teixeira, I couldn't stand him. I couldn't stand that he signed with the Yankees for all that money. He spurned hometown Baltimore, blah 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 blah, and he killed us for all that time. Like, do you guys have players that as they get close to retiring, you realize that you were actually kind of fond of them? And you're going to actually miss them when they're gone? Because that's been my
experience
to Shara. Like, guys that aren't Mariners, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't really cared about Mark Teixeira since he wasn't a Ranger.
Dude, that's how I feel about David Ortiz.
Oh, interesting.
Like, I'm actually very sad that David Ortiz is retiring because the guy is a fucking legend.
He's slugging 640 or something.
It's like ridiculous that. What he's doing. And I mean, obviously, opinion just change, but when I was a college student and in 2004, very much rooting for the Red Sox to win the World Series. I still have those memories,
God,
and now that Ortiz is retiring, it makes me feel a little sad.
I tell you what makes me feel sad is that the guy that he kept driving in 2004 is the manager of the Dodgers, and everything is just, time is just a bitch, and we're all so old.
Wait, Bill Miller is managing the
Dave
Dodgers?
Dave Roberts, yo!
Kidding.
Jason Veritek is managing the Dodgers.
Hey, Jason Veritek was a Mariner once, you know.
Yeah, wait, so was David Ortiz.
Jesus, I got dark.
And
fast.
Mike Timlin.
And Adam Jones.
Paul Spoljarek is my dude, so it's all good. I have a t-shirt that says Paul Spoljarek is my homeboy.
Why did you get that?
I don't actually have that.
When?
But I would love to have one, just because it would be so ironic. And that's what I'm all about. You guys, let's shift real quick. This is going to be a deeper subject than we normally talk about. Before we do Twitter Q&A, I want to talk a little bit about the Jose Fernandez thing, because I'd feel like we'd be remiss if we didn't at least touch on it. First of all, I assume you guys, I know, David, that you spend all of your waking hours in your metal box, but I assume that from there you were able to kind of keep up with the storyline, and Scott, I know you and I have talked that you were able to keep up on that. The pithy thing to do is to try to say, like, this would be like if X Mariner
blank
Mariner had the same kind of thing happen to them. And the thing,
it's an impossible comparison.
It is, because there's
he's, oh my gosh, It's like he just turned 24. And that's, he turned 24 like 2 months ago.
Well, on the very, it's that, it's his talent, it's his charisma, and it's him.
It's what he meant to the community.
Yeah,
he was
it's
in.
It's where yeah. It's yeah. Who he.
I mean, the place he was playing in was perfect.
Absolutely, that's what's truly devastating.
Yeah,
he to was
me, is that that was
Miami
the fit. You consider, you know, defecting from Cuba and the path he had to take on his fourth attempt to get there, and ending up in Miami and being just a phenom and coming back from the injury and not skipping any beats at all and basically evolving into the pitcher that everybody thought Steven Strasburg was going to be.
Yeah.
You know, just yeah. like the guy, the best right-handed pitcher of this generation.
And one that he was probably the last one in this line, Clayton Kershaw, Strasburg. And I'm sure there have been others. Oh, Verlander for a long time, for the longest time, because I was a bitter, bitchy Mariner fan. Like the one thing I had was Felix. And anytime some guy would come along that like, oh, and Francisco Liriano did this too when he first came.
Yeah.
And whenever there was a young phenom, I'd get like almost like, you know, mama bear protective. Oh, he's not Felix, you know, like get all blustery and like,
sure.
he's not my
that's
guy.
That's all we had.
Because yeah, Felix is the best. And Fernandez was, it is probably time. Because it just time passed, but that first time that Fernandez came up, I think in 2013,
yeah,
when he won the Rookie of the Year, that was the first one where I just kind of took a step back and said, you know what, like fuck all of that, fuck my stupid provincialism and my need to like attach my fandom to like look at this kid pitch and his age and his talent. And that was before I knew his backstory, how he defected from Cuba and all of that stuff. That was just a talent that radiated. Like, I don't give a shit about the Marlins. And that's the thing, as a Mariner fan, that organization is literally as far removed
like I couldn't
here.
Care less. Yeah,
they're
I mean,
as
I
far
never
from geographically and from our consciousness as any baseball team possibly could be. And you could watch that guy pitch and not give a crap about any of that because he was so electric. And Scott, you're right. He's exactly what Strasburg was supposed to be. He's what every phenom
yeah.
ever should have been.
And you pair him with Giancarlo, and it's like that franchise was
just
I mean, full of character.
Land of the freaks, but in the good way.
Yeah.
You know, and that and like you guys said, that's not even touching. And I don't know if you guys saw it on Twitter, that picture of him sitting in a chair watching the fireworks in Dodger Stadium.
Yeah.
After he pitched.
Yeah.
Just the anecdotes that pour forward, and it all led up to I think it was Monday's game. What's today? Wednesday. The first game, they canceled the game the morning that we passed,
yeah.
which was Sunday. They played mm-hmm. Monday, and everybody at this point knows that D. Gordon got into the batter's box in the bottom of the first, took the first pitch wearing Fernandez's helmet, batted from the right side as a left-handed hitter, and then two pitches later hit his first home run of the year, and he broke down crying coming around first base, and it doesn't make anything better.
No, it doesn't
fix anything. But Jeff Sullivan, who I'm tired of making jokes about how Jeff, I once heard of Jeff. Jeff started that. Obviously, I know who the hell Jeff is. Jeff wrote the great thing about this piece for me, and everybody wrote good work. There were tons of great things out there. He wrote the great thing about that it was our wake as baseball fans and as baseball people, and watching right. his teammates go through that. I think for me, I don't like to recency bias this. And I get tired of people trying to rank historical events, especially ones that just happened, but we are going to look back on that game as I think the most iconic thing to happen.
It's very impactful.
This decade.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily unique to baseball, but it is. If you love the game of baseball, it meant everything to see those men pay tribute to their teammate the way that they did.
And the way that they paid tribute meant, I think it just showed that it was so much more than talent.
So much more.
So much more than talent.
Yeah.
This was a guy who was loved.
Yeah. For me, it was very reminiscent of when Sean Taylor passed for the
yes.
the Washington. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good comparison, actually.
And it's one of those things that will echo through this sport for a long, long time.
And they're already talking about naming an award after him that embodies the spirit and passion of the game. I think that's a great idea. None of that brings him back. And I think the thing I loved the most about Jeff's piece was how he, and this is if you've ever lost somebody close to you, especially suddenly, and you're not ready for that to happen, that desire to spend every waking second, like your mind becomes obsessed with this idea of memorializing them. And you could see his team do that, like the impromptu rubbing of the dirt of the mound onto their uniforms before they went and played, D. Gordon's right. tribute, the tears, the way they all pointed to the sky after everything that happened. And then that we actually caught the audio after the game of all of them again, just kind of, you know, just wandering around the mound, like totally unorganized and just sitting there and Giancarlo speaking. And then you hear one guy just say, let's leave our hats on the mound. Like obviously clearly unplanned, but that's sure. the grief.
Yeah.
That's just, we have to honor like our, it's that longing to make it matter, you know. It's such a ultimately meaningless but inherently beautiful human act, and to see that play out with such a talent and such a player, and I'm on a soapbox now, but man, it was just the most amazing thing I've seen in baseball, like I said, in the entire decade. It's just it was bigger than the game, obviously, but it was
yeah, and it's beautiful to see. I mean, to take a silver lining, which there are very few, but it's beautiful to see humans playing a human sport that humans enjoy.
Yeah. Mm. It's just, you know, these guys are
in that way.
Yeah, yeah. And if you've ever been on a baseball team, you know that a lot of these guys tend to not be super nuanced thinkers. And you see them reduced to just that binary emotion of love. And you know that that's what drove them. And it's so much, it's just, like whatever cultural differences there were, and you know that they're in that deck. Fucking Ichiro's on that roster, for God's sake.
Yeah. Gosh,
you know, geez. Like, like there's so many divides.
Rodney's on that
roster. Many disagreements. So many guys that look at other guys are like, man, what the hell is that guy's deal? And they were all brought together by one Jose Fernandez and his life and his legacy and his talent and his incredible ability to connect with people, and two, by the game of baseball. And it's just an amazing thing. So
Jose Fernandez, by the way, just for perspective of how talented he actually was, this 2016 season, top five strikeouts per nine season ever.
Did I see that he retired with the highest career strikeout per nine rate in history? Is that accurate?
I don't know. I'd have to do the qualifying.
He was 24,
but sure,
he was on the way up. So
yep.
Pitchers
that had more strikeouts per nine than him in a single season are Randy Johnson, Pedro Martinez, and Kerry Wood's rookie year.
And that's it.
That's it. Not Nolan Ryan, not Kershaw, not, you know,
yeah,
Dwight Gooden or Nomo or any of these other people that had insane strikeout years.
If you
all time, 24 years old.
Yeah, if you love
it,
go ahead, yeah. David.
Just going to say, it's always, for me, I remember the most shocking thing a couple days ago was just, I was perusing Fangraphs and happened to click on individual stats for pitchers and seeing his name at the top of the list, essentially. It was just like, you know, how bizarre is that now?
Yeah, so they're you yeah. know, it's fuck the awards and fuck all the interior. Just give the guy the Cy Young Award. You know, name an award after him. Name the damn stadium after him. Like, that guy, for a game that has its head up its own ass with unwritten rules and a lot of bullshit that it can tend to be racially coded, that the game needs more guys like Jose Fernandez. And if there's one, like you said, there are no real silver linings. But if there's one silver lining, it's that the publicity and the exposure from his passing will inspire other people to find the same joy in the game that he had. Because that's what we need more of in the game. So, with that said, I think that we should take a quick break and then lighten the mood a little bit with some Twitter Q&A. Are you guys cool with that?
Yes, sir.
All right.
For me.
We will take a short break and be right back.
I still have the things you gave me. For anointing oils, the paper weight you made. For should I haven't carried them? My friend, don't carry on, carrying efforts you to leave me. Just go. Oh, oh, oh. Stopping you would stifle your enchanting ghost.
And we're back. And we are going to thank you, by the way, for indulging us in some off-brand, actual real-world discussion. We don't normally do that, but that was a really interesting topic. But we're going to shift back to our normal nonsense, which we can always do every week, thanks to your completely ridiculous Twitter questions. Sometimes they're not so ridiculous, though, and I don't know which question David is going to ask, but you have one. Is that correct, David?
I do. I do have an opening question.
And it is?
This comes in from staff writer, who is John Troopin, who you can find at John Troopin.
Is that the dude with the green hair?
Mm-hmm, green hair, man.
Okay.
He wonders, what is your most vivid Mariners playoff memory non-double division?
Oh.
You got it.
I got it.
Go for it.
I mean, I think it's fair to call it a playoff appearance, but
game 163.
Yeah, it's 9-1 Angels Mariners Kingdom. I don't remember when the first pitch was, but I think it was about 1 o'clock, and it was on a weekday.
Yep.
And I was in school. I was in 1995. I was in fifth grade, and I just remember driving home, getting driven home on the school bus. And our salty-ass bus driver, who was a not-pleasant person, put in the game on the radio for everybody, and listening to Rick Riz call Luis Soho's double plus errors inside the park, bases clearing home run, whatever it was. At the time, it was absolutely an inside-the-park home run.
Yep.
And everybody scores. And me being on a bus full of people who... realistically, there's no way that you put 20 fifth graders together on a bus and they're all into baseball, but everybody just going absolutely nuts. And this city all being united and just so insanely into the moment and the emotion and everything. And I'll never forget it. And it took me years and years. And about 5 years ago, I finally tracked down that Mariners Greatest Games DVD that you can buy that has that game on it, and rewatched it in its entirety, which was amazing. That was actually the first time I'd ever seen that game.
Ah.
Because I listened to it on the radio when it actually happened. So that's my top one for sure. Second is probably the Carlos Guillen illegal bunt against the White Sox. That's probably... That's probably number two, but yeah, Soho, everybody scores. That's got to be my top.
You know, I have two. I'm going to take a, because he said most vivid, which does not necessarily connotate towards positive. So I have a good and I have a bad. My positive is from the same game that Scott referenced. Actually, I was, I think, in seventh grade, because I'm even older than Scott, and we were actually on family vacation then, and we were down in Bend, Oregon in a hotel room, and I remember watching that game because I got to watch it. We didn't have cable, so there was already the thrill of getting to watch this game on ESPN, and at the time, Chris Berman calling the game was this huge deal to me before he became just a sweaty, you know, sock puppet that just yelled at me for no reason at all. But I remember
it's like the sardines from SpongeBob.
Yeah.
So, shout out millennials.
So anyway, this game's happening, and everybody obviously knows the lead up to it, and the fact that the team had never made the playoffs before in 18 years, and just the absurd way that they got to that point, and all of the what September did, and Scott spoke to it really well. The way that it united the city, I still don't think, and it's probably time and nostalgia in my youth, I don't ever remember this region being united behind a sports team so universally the way they were by that Mariners team. That's what made it special.
People think the Seahawks, I mean, no disrespect to the Seahawks and the 2013-2014 movement, and now it's everywhere, but that is not the surge of phenomenon that we had.
Yeah.
before. It was just so different.
It was everywhere.
Because literally, this city did not give. This city didn't give a shit about anything regarding sports until that happened.
Yeah.
This is before the Sonics were. I mean, the Sonics were good.
Well, the Sonics had a championship.
Yeah, but, you know, 15, 16 years before 1995, right? 1979, yeah. Yep. Championship. So, I mean, this was a dormant baseball town, football town, especially football town. This was not a football
town. It was
city.
A college
this
football
was
town more than anything.
Baseball city.
If you want to label it anything.
Yeah.
It's the Huskies.
Oh, for sure.
Yep.
Early 90s. Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, that game started, and what I remember is, you know, all of that going into it, and when you're 13, anything's possible. Awesome. And I remember Randy Johnson, the very first pitch of that game, threw it to Tony Phillips, and Tony Phillips had that crazy high leg kick, huge hitch in his swing, and he took a wild swing at it, and he popped it up towards the first base side, and he didn't realize where he'd hit it, so he kind of stepped out of the box because it was a foul ball, but then somebody yelled at him that it might be a blooper, and so he kind of took this giant step forward, like, oh shit, I should run, but then he realized again that it was going to be out of play, and this all happened in, you know, maybe 3/4 of a second to a second, and it all played out right in front of you. Then the camera switched, and you just see Tino Martinez just hauling his ass. All you see is the back of his uniform just sprinting away from first base, and at the very last second, probably about 30-40 feet into foul ground, about 10 feet away from the warning track, he just sticks his glove out and just spears the ball, and it was the very first pitch of that game, and I just remember the roar of that crowd and just like, this is how this starts. You know, just this like, yep. The very first thing that happens. And it's like, okay, let's go. And then Scott spoke really well. That game, I think, ended up being 9-1. At the time that Soho hit that crazy ass, whatever it was, the game was 1-0 in, like, the sixth inning. It was tense as hell. And then they went on to blow him out. So, anyway, and then my negative is in 2000, which is vivid to me because I didn't get to watch that team all year because I was at this dumbass school in L.A. that didn't have cable. but I ended up watching the ALCS against the Yankees. I can't remember which game it was, but I remember Roger Clemens striking out 15 Mariners right after the very first time that Alex Rodriguez came up, and I think that was his last year as a Mariner in 2000. I remember Roger Clemens putting the very first pitch directly under his chin in the very first inning. And I already hated Roger Clemens. And then he went on to one hit that Mariner team, complete game, 15 strikeouts. And I remember just going outside my dorm, and I just remember punching a garbage can harder than I'd ever punched anything in my entire life because I was just so mad. So, yeah. God, I want to do that again. That, you know, if there's – brief digression. If there's anything this team has given me again –
I want to punch another garbage can.
I want to punch garbage can.
It's that feeling of immense frustration because they've made me care so much.
It's emotional investment.
Yeah.
It is.
Do you, David, do you have...
If you have no body, if you have no floor, you have no ceiling.
That's...
Yeah.
To your emotions. I truly believe that.
Yep. That's very, very fair.
Which is why it's going to be so fucking good when this team finally wins a World Series.
Oh, maybe God. In the playoffs next week. It's in play.
Yeah.
David, do you have any memories of the playoffs?
I do. I just like you have a very positive and a very negative one. I associate vivid with scene, so I don't know if it counts, but I parked on the side of the road with my dad and listened to The Bunt. And I was in third grade, and that just was so insanely cool to me. Like, my dad and I was kind of raised in a household where, I don't know, emotional currency isn't really what you bought anything with. You know, things are supposed to be kind of even keel and yada yada. So a moment where my dad and I could together lose our shit was super unique and has only happened a couple times in my life. So that moment sticks out in a very major way to me, and I've actually never seen that game. I only listen to it on the radio.
You've seen the highlight of The Bunt,
I've
right?
seen The Bunt, yeah. And yeah, he's way out
very
of the box.
Super illegal.
But actually, my most, I guess, technically vivid memory is of, for some reason, I my memory very much imprints finality. And like, I remember the final time the Sonics were in the playoffs. I remember the shot that Ray Allen took that rimmed off.
Oh,
yeah. I remember that too.
But I remember the very, very... The only thing I remember of the final game of the 2001 playoffs is the last out. That's the only thing I remember. And I remember watching Mike Cameron line out to Shane Spencer. That will never leave my mind.
Damn.
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
12-3. Just a phenomenal loss. Wow. The game before, Lou Piniella promised they were coming back to Safeco.
And nope.
And I just remember the feeling I had watching that ball not land.
Yep. 12-3. Greatest baseball team that either any of us will ever see.
Most home runs ever by a team?
The 2001 Mariners? No.
Yeah.
No,
2001.
No, it was 97.
No way.
90s, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But the greatest baseball team.
But 2001 didn't hit that many homers.
Oh, really?
No.
It was Gap City.
It was the greatest defense.
It was that, new Gap City.
If you want, a lot of people call the Cubs one of the greatest teams of all time, and their win total won't back that up. But the way that they're built is really similar to the 2001 Mariners, which is just that they hit enough, they have some good pitching, and they absolutely pick it, unlike any other team in baseball. They have unbelievable defense. So, and that's what the 2001 Mariners were. What's our next question, David?
Our next question comes in, I guess for the first two, we're going to keep a theme of questions fielded from, and we have another good question from the staff, but we'll do this one first. This one comes in from longtime contributor Patrick Dubuque. He wonders who you can find at, I don't know how to pronounce it.
But Dubuque.
It's called Infinite Sadness.
He wonders why we get angry at players who play badly. What do they owe us?
I'll try to leave that one off. First of all, Patrick asked this question purely to annoy us, and specifically me, because that is his brand. why do we get angry at players? There's agency there, right?
It's because of the investment of time.
I think it's that. I don't think it's a universal thing. I think there maybe are shared universal traits why we do that. I think other people have very personal reasons for why they do that. I think we misappropriate a lot of our own personal failings onto these guys when we see them do that.
Sure. Our failures become theirs.
Yes. And their failures become ours. And I think that there's just this idea of, you know, what is fandom? It's representation on a bigger stage. And when we root for the Mariners, we root for them to make us proud, you know, to glorify in some ways us for what we do, which is to yell for them, I guess. The whole relationship is really odd and fractured and bizarre, especially given how much money they make to do this. But yeah,
I
go ahead.
I think to expand on that a little bit, and I completely agree, but I think a lot of it comes from not really from myself, but I think from a fan base is that it's very aggravating to see somebody from a perception standpoint seem like they care less about what they're doing than a fan cares about what's happening. So a fan watches the game, makes no money. A player is playing the game that influences all of the fans' emotions, but seemingly gives less effort than in an idealistic world where, oh, if I was making that much money and I was placing that opportunity, I would have done this and taken so much more. Yeah. It's that Monday morning quarterback culture, right? It's that mentality of a sports fan. And that's not necessarily why I get upset, but I think that's why a lot of people get upset. I actually don't really get upset when a player gets in a cold streak or does poorly. I more just get sad than I get mad. I'm not a get super mad kind of guy.
Do you think we get angrier, especially in the day? This isn't exactly Patrick's direct question. And David, I know I want to let you speak on this too, but if I can just add a little sub question, do you think in the day and age of Moneyball and sabermetric revolution and, you know, outside the park and all these really fun fantasy things that we have, do you think we get more viscerally angry at what we perceive as mismanagement than we do at poor play?
Because
we feel like
you're probably right.
We
because everyone feels like they could have made a better decision.
Yeah, like I've managed my OOTP team to a division title. Like I know the strategy that I would do there. I've read the numbers. I've done the research. You know what I mean? Sorry, Scott, I cut you off.
I got Chris Bryant for Jake Merson.
good job.
No, it's I think it's absolutely true, and I don't mean to hop in here, but for me personally, and I know that 100% I was guilty of this sometimes when I would write, is I'd look at all the information I had in front of me and be like, holy shit, there's so much information that I have. Mm-hmm. Look at all this info I have. I know all the defensive metrics. I watch this whoever play every single day. I can see their trends. Why can't a general manager see this? Why can't a manager see this? And you don't even consider for a second there's a possibility that they would have information that you do not have.
Great example tonight when this afternoon when James Paxton got pulled after five at 92 pitches, and then his replacement, Nick Vincent, gives up a home run on the very next pitch. And it's like, well, James Paxton's thrown, 110 pitches before. Like, why can't we grind him out there over throwing the, like, soft underbelly of the bullpen at this Houston Astros team? And on paper, that makes perfect sense. But we're not in the dugout. We don't know what Paxton said. We don't know what the trainers are telling Service. Like, we just don't know that information.
Yeah,
you know,
there's a ton of misinformation, too.
Yeah, of course.
We're way off of Patrick's original question.
I mean, I think all of us have written before. Certainly I have, and written something and been like,
yeah,
I'm confident in this. And then more information comes out that you had no idea when you write something, and you go,
I think the worst thing you can do is assume that they're... If you assume gross incompetence, that's what's going to make you look like a horse's ass.
The problem is that gross incompetence is absolutely the Mariners brand for a very long time, and it takes a number of years to believe that that is not the inherent truth when you're making an assumption.
I would not argue that point. David, I'm sorry, you got cut off.
I don't know. I mean, to take the view as a fan that you have a level of information that would allow you to make a better decision, for me is crazy arrogance. I mean, these guys are seasoned people within the game. It's not like they're just out there making decisions on their own accord constantly. I mean, the margins are so small, but because baseball has so much repetition, the margins become more obvious over time. But the origin of the decision is so unknown to us, and the reasons why are so unknown that it's mind-blowing to me that you could ever assume that you could step into that position and have made a better call. And it's only in retrospect that you make assumptions like that.
I think that we're dealing with a really interesting duality, which is that it was really fluky. You had two things happen. You had one, the sabermetric revolution, and for whatever reason, who knows why exactly, Mariner fans and Mariner writers – had a trend towards being at the absolute forefront of that thought and that movement. And at the same exact time, the Mariners legitimately had one of the worst general managers in the last two decades. And that is what Bill Bevesi was. Jack Zirinsik was a middling general manager. Bill Bevesi was an absolute unqualified disaster. So when you have those two things running simultaneous against each other, it gets really easy to think that, yeah, the average guy actually can do better, because guess what? It really felt like that for a while. Because Bill Bevesi was so bad. He was so bad.
Yeah, and his cards were always on the table.
Yeah. He was just an awful general manager. And you had a group of really thoughtful, very intelligent, very articulate writers, who many of whom happened to be Mariner fans at the time, all observing this and saying, collectively, what in the actual fuck are you idiots doing? And they were right. And does that make every general manager who makes a mistake an idiot? Does that make every manager? No. Does that make every sabermetrically inclined writer right? Obviously not. That's been proven incorrect. So we're way off of Patrick's original point.
Josh Cow. Who you can find, friend of the podcast.
Who Josh find, Huck.
At Josh Cow 44. Mm-hmm. Cow, of course, spelled in the traditional way, K-U-H.
Yeah, I think that's Flemish.
W.
Wonders, who's your favorite Mariner that sucks at baseball?
Is this all time?
I think we can open this up to all time.
I bet I know what Scott's all time is.
Yeah, you already know it. Why don't you answer the fucking question for me?
Is it hard-hitting?
No.
No.
No, it's the pudgy catcher with the glasses.
Oh. Yeah.
Not a catcher. But only in 1990 Upper Deck is he a catcher. It is one and only Greg Brierley. He's one of my all time favorite Mariners. I've said it before, as a nerdy ass kid growing up who had to wear glasses and was not great at baseball, he was a role model for me, and I appreciate him. And his
role model for me.
And his hijinks on Upper Deck cards, in which he just had a little fun with the photo shoot and tossed on a catcher's mitt.
I love really it so appreciate much. That is a great.
I don't know why I liked Greg Brierley so much. He just was scrappy and fast, just sort of a Danny Woodhead of outfielders, and I just enjoyed him.
Very
Danny
much.
Woodhead of outfielders.
There's, I was an like amazing eight, I was like 8 years old when I it's I an amazing liked him, cop. So.
I'll answer mine quickly, and I think mine's Charles Gibson.
Ooh, that's a good one. And he does suck.
He sucks. But man, that kid can fly.
It's that elite tool fetish. And I share it
yes,
too.
It is.
Like
another great answer to this would be Bobby Wolcott, by the way. Oof. One game
yep.
to define an entire career of irrational.
And he was games. Originally really bad in it.
Yeah.
Mine is not interesting at all. It's Willie Bloomquist. Because I played against him in the league, and he is the favored son of my hometown, in which I still reside. And he is, not somebody that I particularly want to spend time with. We don't have a lot in common. He just tweeted a really interesting picture of a very, very nice firearm that he was excited to go use, which is not an interest that he and I share.
No politics.
Nope. No politics. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that tweet or that picture or that firearm. It's just not an interest that I share. Watching a guy from my hometown succeed that way inspired me
a lot.
That's
cool. Yeah.
And his family has gone on to give back, like the Little League field at the Little League that I played at is called Bill Bloomquist Field because of his family's charitable donation to the Little League that I grew up playing in. So. Him giving back to where he came from is a pretty cool thing. So, probably a little more serious than David Cow wanted, but fuck you.
Josh Cow.
Did I say Mr. Cow?
David. You said David.
Oh, that's his David new name. Cow. David Cow it is.
We'll go ahead and mess up both names.
Friend of the podcast, Mike Barr.
Mm. Is this the scout?
At Seahawk Scout.
Okay.
Wonders, which Mariner is your spirit animal? Each one of you choose for yourselves and the two others.
Okay, first of all, I'm not going to let him tell us what to do.
Yeah, fuck you, Mike.
That's a lot of work.
Yeah, we're not doing that. We can each pick our own.
Yeah, we'll just pick our own.
Yeah, you go first, David.
Are we going current Mariner?
You do whatever you want.
Wow.
I'm the anti-Mike Barr in this case.
Yeah,
you
current.
A lot.
Wait, okay, everyone and my own.
Nope, just yours.
I want to say Brett Boone.
Yep.
I buy that mind. Completely.
I think that's right.
Because never stop bat flipping.
It is fully in my spectrum.
Also, you are both fairly squat, extremely yes. muscular, very Aryan people. Great thighs. Tropic Thunder 2 was named after my thighs.
We don't know Scott's going to say Greg Brierley.
No, there's no chance. Actually, I think my spirit animal is Al Martin, because somehow I lied and scammed and cheated my way onto an amazing roster.
Because you were a polygamist, but that's good.
I did not play USC football, but I said I did, and then I ended up running a very large Mariners website for somewhere between 2 and 3 years. So that's what I'll go with.
I can't
checks out.
You know, if I had to think of one, it would be it'd be Chris Young, just because.
Sorry, is that Chris B. Young or
this Chris the Gentle Giant Young, whatever his middle initial is.
Ah, yes. 6'13", Chris Young.
Yes, 6'13", Chris Young. Just because we're both guys without much of a heater, who are just trying to smile and generally hope that people think we're nice enough that they let us stick around.
Chris Ryan's middle name, or Chris, I just gave it. Chris Young's middle name is Ryan.
Chris Ryan Young.
Well, you botched that one.
Well, you know, I do a lot of botching these days.
Yeah, Chris Young's mine. What's our next question? We've got time probably for two more, and then we should wrap up.
Perfect, perfect. So this one is a non-baseball cue.
Coming Love from it.
Friend of the podcast, Kyle Rancourt. Who you can find at Kyle Rancourt.
Mm, with a C, not a K.
What a guy.
Yeah. He wants to know, Scott just returned from Greece.
Oh.
Coolest place you've ever been? Place you most want to visit?
Hey, thank you for not robbing my house when I was out. Listeners of the podcast, I appreciate that.
Is this where we give your address out for everyone?
Yeah.
This is that moment.
Lake Medina. Wait, Lake Medina?
Lake Medina.
Lake Medina. I don't live there.
No.
That's for sure. Or do I?
Scott, yeah. How did Greece rank for you? You've traveled a fair bit. That's like kind of a passion for you and your wife, right?
Yeah. I thought Greece was fantastic. Santorini is definitely one of my favorite places I've ever been. And I went to Mykonos and Athens as well, and I loved both of them a lot. Santorini was a highlight for sure. My favorite place that I've ever been is, I think, culturally not dissimilar from Greece, a little less touristy, and I just think maybe a little better food and just fire. The most amazing people in the world would probably be Croatia.
Ooh, interesting.
I think Split, Croatia, is probably my favorite place I've ever traveled, and I really just cannot wait to go back. Just amazing old history, new history, if you're into that. I mean, you've got incredibly old ruins there, and then you have like Yugoslavian, you know, buildings that were bombed and never got rebuilt, and it's just super interesting. But the food and the people and the water, and it's incredible. Croatia, it's the best. That's my favorite.
Nice. Where do you want to go? Like, what's the dream destination?
What's the next spot?
Next spot is Australia and New Zealand sometime next year, which should be fun. And then it will be a reevaluation of where my life is going. And then we'll decide where we're going to travel next. Or...
It ends with your death, Scott. Spoiler alert.
You can go ahead and consider what that means for someone that's been married for 8 years.
To be fair, Scott, we did just endorse sort of that activity.
The fun thing is that could mean so many things that you just said, and I hope it's the one that I want it to be and not the sad one.
Of course. Okay. Well, you say to don't do it all the time, so we'll find out. We'll find out what that means. But
potentially very exciting. You should ask David about Australia, because David, you have experience with Australia.
I have.
I think I've officially jumped onto that trip with them. I don't know.
But it's official.
I think it was just an assumption all along that we were going to have to buy three tickets.
We talked April.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, that is exactly the timeline.
I'm pretty sure we're doing. Yeah, that's so. That'll be fun.
Does it
make
the trip?
We'll have
more.
We'll have
more sweeter to you to know how much it hurts me that I can't go there with.
And then you know what?
As if I can actually go.
And then we'll just adopt you, and then everything resolves itself, and then we'll travel somewhere else in November.
Don't have kids unless I can legally become yours.
Don't have kids unless you start when they're 25.
I wish I were 25. David, where have you traveled?
So, I mean, going off of that, I was lucky enough to do about 6 months of terrestrial and marine ecological research for the University of Queensland all over Australia. So that was amazing. I would say capped off by I lived for 3 weeks in the middle of the Great Barrier Reef with literally no one around on an island that was two-thirds of a mile long, and just did coral research for 3 weeks and didn't see a person really except for the people I was with, and it was insane. That was untoppable, and one of those moments where you kind of knew you were living at the peak of your life, so it was just like, you know, drink it all in. And I would say number one, I think, on my list of travels is Madagascar.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good movie.
I really, really want to go.
Good movie.
I mean, amazing movie and incredible lemurs.
Yes. They like to move it.
I meant to play.
That's why Madagascar. I mean, I'm interested in South Africa. If I'm going
So Madagascar, because I, as listeners probably don't know, have two BSs in essentially field ecology and environmental science. So very into natural places. And Madagascar, like Australia, is the second most geographically isolated island in terms of time. So Madagascar has been by itself for something like 40 million years. So the life there is very unique, sort of like Australia. And that fascinates me. And it looks gorgeous, and I really want
to
go.
You need to leave those Webers in Australia and go to Madagascar.
Yeah, for the short flight to Madagascar.
Yeah.
Hop, skip, and a jump.
Nathan, what about you?
So I, due to the mistakes that I try to protect other people from, just the way that my life has gone, I have not been able to travel as much as either of you. But actually, mine is really recent. It's very stereotypical to really love Hawaii, but I'd never been to the Big Island. And I went there last year, shortly after kind of I had a bad car accident. And it was kind of one of those, you know, like, oh God, my life, it could end at any time and I should explore that. So we went to the Big Island and it was our last full day there. And we had a guy point us towards a hike we could go down that was a miserable hike down a very steep cliff, and the kids hated it the entire time. And we got down there, and because it was so miserable, almost nobody made it to the bottom. And at the bottom of that was basically the foliage from Jurassic Park, without the dinosaurs, which was
filmed in Hawaii.
Yeah, exactly. It felt exactly like, and it was remote, and there was nobody there. We even found, like, somebody had built at some point an old thatch hut that nobody lived in anymore, but that was there. We found an actual, like, vine rope swing, and we sat on the beach all by ourselves, and just felt like we were actually stepping back in time, which I think in some ways is kind of the allure of travel for a few of us. And as for where I would like to go, going on the same lines, David, you touched on remoteness. I would really, really, really love to go to Mongolia. I've just heard really amazing things about the culture there, especially when you get out of the capital city, whose name I will currently butcher, so I won't try to do it. But apparently that's the only major metropolis in that whole country, and you can just get out into the wild in a way that there are not a lot of places on Earth that are super livable that you can still do. So if I can get out there, it'd be really great.
Do you mind if I take a swing at the capital city of Mongolia?
Oh, no. I don't have it in front of me, so if you got it in front of you.
It is, I believe, Ulaanbaatar.
Yes, I believe that's correct. And for our Mongolian listeners, feel free to correct it. That sounds
are we right. ready for our final cue?
Let's do our final cue.
So ready.
Staff member Isabel Manasian.
I thought it was Manasian.
Yes. What are your thoughts on soup? Oh, you can find Isabel at 95, the number, coffee spoons.
As in what? 1995 Seattle Mariners.
Yes. As in, what are your thoughts on soup? Topical and surprisingly controversial.
Well, that's – she asked the question and then, like, basically, like, talks it out.
Disclaimed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, look at how good my question is.
I mean, to be honest, like, pretty annoying.
Honestly, fairly arrogant for being totally truthful. Do you guys like soup? I spoke about soup on our last episode. It rocks.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I know you're into soup because you said it was
like
the winter
soup.
Of soups.
It is.
I like soup. Veggie chili soup to go. Let me see y'all, man.
Wait, veggie chili soup? That's fucking horrible soup.
Yeah, that's like the worst soup you could lead with.
Don't worry about it. It's SNL, Justin Timberlake.
Okay, thank God.
No.
Still. You know how I go for the most obscure references.
That's true.
Someone will get it.
Here's what I'd like to, ask. Do you guys like cold soups?
Nah,
cold stew.
Gazpacho sometime. Cold stew? What? No.
Hell yeah, bunch of meat.
No. Cold? No.
Like, intentionally cold, or just like it was hot once and
no,
sort
like,
of like
yeah,
tepid
like
now?
That's the way. I could do cold chili that way.
No. Jesus. Cold soup
but I wouldn't
has got to be
it.
It's got to be like a gazpacho, like a even something that has some melon in it or something.
Yeah,
or like I could do like chilled, I could do chilled carrot soup or something like that, but I can't.
Melon is kind of a.
If you put meat in it, no, that shit's got to be hot.
No, then you're just like eating dog food.
Okay, what's your favorite soup?
Ooh, so the restaurant.
We all agree that if you don't like soup, it's because you don't make soup well, right?
Yeah, it's because and also because you have like personal failings.
Well, yeah, I mean you're probably not worthy of living.
No one. Well, okay. initial outrage followed by that checks out. So when I at the restaurant that I used to work at, they spent like days and days making this stock for lobster bisque. And it was just the best, richest, creamy.
So into lobster bisque.
Oh, God. It was, and they used all the right ingredients. They did it all the right way. They cut no corners, and it was just absolute heaven. And
oh, my God.
It was the best.
The restaurant I used to work at, they'd, like, cut the corner off a plastic bag and just really just pour that tortilla soup
California
in. And then they'd, hey, don't blow up my spot, all right? You guys want a good soup, handcrafted? Shout out California Pizza Kitchen.
What you're doing is you're just making the menu for teen intern Scott George's next meal. That's where he's headed.
the restaurant I used to work at made a killer tomato bisque, but I will say my mom makes we all have a mom recipe that we love, but I, as someone who is in the food and beverage industry, am very critical of food that's made for me. The best clam chowder I have ever had in my life. Like, hands down, it's full of bacon. It's full of butter, bay leaves, cream, like full buttermilk
controversial
cream.
Ingredients.
It's
especially
insane.
For my belly.
It's not for Scott Weber, but I never needed it to be. It's for me.
So podcast-wise, we generally endorse soups. We don't actually think there's a large controversy there unless for whatever reason you like cold meat in your soup, in which case, what the actual hell is wrong with you?
Hey,
buy some butane
anyway.
And heat it up.
Yeah.
Buy some butane. What are we?
Camping.
It's the only source of heat you would ever need.
Not only is soup the great winter meal, it's the great camping meal. So
great equalizer.
It is fantastic. Gentlemen, any last final thoughts? This episode has gone a little bit long because
I have a quick cue.
Oh,
because we really haven't touched on it that much.
Okay.
The Mariners are two games out of the playoffs with four games left against the Oakland Athletics.
Okay, yes.
Yep.
As of this morning, knowing what we know that happened with today, there's still two games out, four games left. As of this morning, Baseball Perspectives gave them 11% odds of making the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Over, under.
Oh, under.
I would say under for sure.
After the,
I think it's about, I think it was 5% after today.
The Blue Jays blowing that game killed them.
Like, okay.
So they have.
So it is a little big league.
I disagree with math. Yeah, it is a little big league. Not quite. Dave Maga didn't die like a dog. By the way, we all know that Little Big League is the best baseball
movie,
right?
I have no counter argument. It is utterly.
No, you're gonna just skip on Dennis Quaid's The Rookie like that?
Yeah.
Here's how I'll end it. This is the last.
Oh, the radar gun's broken.
And then it just doesn't flash for like 3 seconds, and it's like,
yeah, I hate those radar guns
becomes
that have
98.
That like 98 second delay of like the one line on the side of the nine.
Yeah.
Hey, what about that one quote by Kevin Costner from Bull Durham?
I've seen Bull Durham.
Just the one, right?
So here's how I'll end the episode. It's the last week of the regular season. We're going to do a season wrap episode. We're going to do, you know, kind of look back on everything that's happened and just kind of try to put a bow on the whole season whenever that actually ends. Hopefully this is not the actual last week of Mariners baseball. But we have four games left. I know we're going to kind of try to make some games. David, I think you're going to try to make Friday. I know Scott and I are going to make Sunday. So I know I specifically am going to try to make Sunday, and it's the last game of the regular season. If you're listening to this and you're kind of on the fence about coming out, please come out.
Please go Sunday.
Please come
people.
Sunday. Come and cheer on the team. Come and hang out with us. Like, the only reason that the podcast, the website, anything that we do is ever any fun is because of you, the listener or the reader, the people that interact with us, the people that really give us feedback and engage us and build this incredible community. And it's just, it's been this amazing experience. It's been a fantastic year, and please come on Sunday and close out this season with us, because it's meant the world to us. So any last thoughts, guys, before we sign off?
I love you all.
Go Biz.
Go Biz. We'll see you Sunday, and we'll be back for the season wrap in November after the World Series. Go Biz.